If it's good enough for the United States...
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're hearing this morning the European Union will launch its own version of bank stress tests, a way to make sure the banks are capable of weathering a severe economic fallout. Our European correspondent Stephen Beer joins us now from London. Stephen, what do we know?
Well, the details are very sketchy. We're just hearing a series of leaks, really, from Brussels. But the word is that EU finance ministers representing the 27 member states, have agreed to a pan-European banking stress test.
Will these look anything like the American stress test that we had this year?
Well, that is the key question. The devil will be in the detail. I mean, the word is that actually it won't be. The European test will be less individualistic than the Americans, you see, conforming to stereotype here. It's going to be more collective. It won't test the ability of each financial institution to withstand a major downturn. It'll test a group of, say, 45 banks with cross-border operations to see whether they can withstand a major downturn. But the details of the individual performance of individual institutions will not be published, apparently.
Why won't we hear any individual details, Stephen?
Well, because here we have the problem. As the Brits have pointed out, there's no such thing as a European taxpayer. If, let me give you an example, a bank in Portugal or Greece, or a series of them in these countries, are identified as severely undercapitalized, who then puts up the money to bail them out? There is no institution that Europe can go to other than, say, Germany, the wealthiest and the most powerful economy in the community, to bail out individual institutions. That is the problem. And if the fear is that if this stress test identifies individual European banks and the governments of the country in which those banks are headquartered cannot, have not the resources to bail them out, that will make matters a lot worse.
All right. The stress test goes global. Stephen Beer joining us from London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
And speaking of stress tests, Bank of America reportedly sold more than $7 billion worth of shares in China Construction Bank after U.S. tests, the bank's trying to raise capital to bolster its bottom line. Right now, European markets are mixed, mostly flat. Asian stocks were all over the place today. The Nikkei lost 1.5%. Yesterday, the Dow lost 1.8%, 155 points. S&P shares were off more than 2%. In less than an hour, the Commerce Department releases its trade deficit for March. There have been a lot of ups and just a few downs, and this latest report could be quite telling. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
For years, the U.S. has bought more from the rest of the world than it sold. 6 months ago, that gap between exports and imports, the trade deficit, reached a record high of $60 billion a month. Today, the deficit is less than half that because the global economy has tanked. Nigel Galt is chief U.S. economist for IHS Global Insight.
We've been looking for a trade deficit decline for a long time. We would have preferred that it would have happened through seeing exports grow faster than imports, rather than seeing exports and imports both declining, but imports declining more.
Galt says the U.S. economy is still too dependent on foreign goods.
There is a long-term rebalancing that's needed in the global economy. We need to see more spending in the rest of the world and more production growth in the U.S.
Galt says it's doubtful that can be achieved in the next few years. He predicts the trade deficit will widen again as the U.S. recovers more quickly than the rest of the world. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing. ConstantContact.com. American Public Media brings you 4 documentaries about the economic crisis, supported by the University of Virginia's Batten Institute. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
The phrase American Dream often brings to mind a house and white picket fence, but that's not everyone's model. In the first part of our Marketplace special series, The Next American Dream, we take a look at an experiment called co-housing, which is centered around sharing common space. I spoke with one resident, Kathy Drenay, who lives at a development in Massachusetts. She says the idea goes back decades.
Well, co-housing has been going on in the United States since the 1970s. The idea behind it is that it's kind of an intentional neighborhood. It is a place where people can live and they want to and expect to interact with their neighbors. You cluster the houses very close together. You reserve the cars to the edges of the community so that the inside of the development is all pedestrian friendly.
It sounds a lot like an apartment complex, but nobody's attached.
It could be, but again, in an apartment complex, most folks only know their neighbors in passing. Conceptually, the idea behind it is you share the resources. Plus, we also have the common house. The common house has a kitchen big enough to cook for the entire neighborhood. We actually have common meals a couple nights a week. There's a kids' room, a yoga studio. We have a sewing room. We have a gym downstairs. And we also have a pool. So rather than the 34 residents building 34 pools or maybe 12 pools, there's only one pool. So you're not using as many resources. We don't have 34 lawnmowers. We're going to have two neighborhood riding lawnmowers, and that's all the lawnmowers are going to have.
Any problems with sharing?
Well, we're newly moved in. The first residents just moved in December, so there hasn't been any problems with sharing yet. If we do run into problems, we actually make decisions using a consensus model rather than, say, for example, voting. The first rule of co-housing is that you talk to each other if there's a problem. We don't have a lot of rules in the same way that a condo association has rules. And a condo association, often the rules are to take the place of talking to each other. In co-housing, we expect people to talk to each other as the first way to resolve conflicts and problems.
You ever see this concept catching on with mainstream America?
I think in this economy, I think that people are looking for ways to save money. And I think that this is one way that you could go ahead and do that. And I think that as people adapt and change to the new economy, I do think that you will see concepts like this begin to seep into middle America. Yes, I do.
Well, Kathy Jernay, good luck. And thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Check out our Next American Dream section inside marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.